Welcome to Local Gov Matters, the podcast that talks about the latest issues facing Wisconsin. In this podcast, we discuss what's happening at the state capitol and in counties around the state. You'll hear from state elected officials, county leaders, and other experts and advocates. We'll provide the local impact of state legislation and insights into how county government works and how it impacts you. It's the background, the stories, and even some insider baseball that will help you frame the issues and make it worth your listen. So whether you're sitting at your desk, driving in your car, or enjoying your morning coffee, we're thrilled you joined us. Let's get started. Welcome to Local Gov Matters, the podcast of the Wisconsin Counties Association. I am Michelle Gormican-Thompson, Communications Consultant with the Wisconsin Counties Association.
And I am Mark O'Connell, President and CEO of the Wisconsin Counties Association.
Well, Mark, we have a tremendous guest here today, an incredibly well-respected individual. It is Charles Franklin, Director of the Marquette Law School Poll. And a fun tidbit going into this, the last time Charles was here was about 2 days before the world shut down in March of 2020. As our podcast, he was the last person here that did the podcast at that time.
I vaguely recall that now. So let's just promise we're not going to have another shutdown 2 days from this event. But you're right, we have Charles Franklin. So many monikers you could put on Charles. Soothsayer, crystal ball reader, Nostradamus. The polling has become incredibly scientific. And of course, there's a human element to it, of course. And can polls be wrong? They can be. But are they often very wrong? No, they're not. And especially when it comes to the Marquette Law School poll, you've got quite a track record of being right on. So that's why everyone pays attention to the Marquette Law School poll, and everyone should pay attention to Charles Franklin, because he dissects and slices and dices these numbers in any number of ways to get at what people are really thinking and how they're really feeling. And we are so fortunate today that Charles is going to tell us what Wisconsin feels and thinks about politics.
Before we get started on that, Charles, welcome.
Good to be here.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me. I hope we won't cause a global pandemic by recording this.
We're all going to knock on wood right now, so we're pretty good. So tell us a little bit about how did you get into polling, and talk a little bit about what is the Marquette Law School poll?
Yeah. Well, I was one of those kids that got interested in a ridiculous thing at a ridiculously early age. I'd been interested in science since I was a little kid. But around the ninth grade, I got interested in politics and social science. And so in the 10th grade, I did my first poll of second, fourth, and sixth graders looking at what their cartoon viewing habits were, with a psychological look at how people mature and their tastes change. And then I did another one in the 12th grade. And then I went to college and majored in political science and was lost forever. So I then did grad school in political science and polling and statistical methods and elections.
So you've been polling for your entire life.
Well, pretty damn close to it.
What were the cartoon viewing?
I was
habits?
Just going to ask.
Well,
that.
Well, the biggest finding was it's really hard to interview second graders. but in the big picture, I was looking for kids at a really young age to be interested in very anthropomorphic kinds of ideas, rabbits and coyotes and things like that, and thought that by the sixth grade, people would be looking at more anthropomorphic or more human characters. And that more or less showed up. But it was, mostly interesting because I did it myself. I did the interviews myself. I tabulated the data myself by making little hash marks because we didn't have computers in those days. So it was interesting. And apparently it ruined me for life because I've kept doing it ever since.
Well, when it comes to characters, some would say we have characters running for President of the United States today. And Michelle, there's a recent poll that kind of touched upon this.
Yes. Charles, we're here today to talk about your latest poll that was released on February 22nd. And it is the headline of New Marquette Law School Poll National Survey finds Trump at 51%, Biden at 49% in head-to-head matchup. Each leads primary challenger by more than 50 points. Tell us about the poll. First off, were you surprised?
Well, it's a close race, and I don't think anybody should be terribly surprised that the race is close. It was a close race in 2020. I think it'll be close this time, but we'll see how that develops. We also did a statewide poll at the end of January, released on February 7th, and that was a 49-49 tie. In the national poll, we're almost exactly the same. So the state, as a swing state, ends up being awfully close to where the country as a whole is. I guess in the big picture of things, Joe Biden's job approval number is down around 40%, which is not good for an incumbent president. And yet he's in a tie, more or less, for the overall vote. I think the thing that stands out in both Wisconsin and nationally is that on issues, Trump has a big advantage on immigration and the border and on the economy. Biden has a modest lead on abortion and on health care. But if you just looked at those issues, you'd think Trump would be well ahead. Also, on personal characteristics, Biden is seen as too old to be president by 61% in this latest national poll. Trump is seen as having more accomplishments as president than Biden has. Again, you would think those things would push in a Trump direction. And yet we're at a tie. Why is that? Well, because Trump comes with his own problems. Considerably more people see him as having behaved corruptly. A very slight majority think that Trump is guilty of committed illegal acts after the election in 2020 leading up through January 6th. So those are Trump's big disadvantages. Both of them suffer on favorability, with more people unfavorable than favorable, and about 18% are unfavorable to both of them. And that number, 18%, creates a big opening for third-party candidates and for uncertainty over the next few months as people ultimately come to the conclusion that they're going to vote for either the Democrat or the Republican. And if they can't take either one of those, what are they going to do? Stay home, skip the top of the ballot, vote for a third party. Stay tuned for the next 8 months to see how that shapes up.
You know, it's amazing because in the polling, these are the two likely candidates. I think something dramatic would have to happen for them not to be the candidates. But when we put them up against either one of them, up against someone else from the opposing party, the someone else comes out way ahead. So it's almost as if, some of these political pundits have said, look, the best weapon for each campaign is that they're running against the other guy, and that's their best weapon. That's kind of a sad commentary, isn't it?
Well, it is, and it shows partly it's a matter of polarization, right? Democrats have a really negative view of Donald Trump. Republicans have a really negative view of Joe Biden. That just sort of evens out the election, and then it's independents who are not real fond of either one of them. We end up with this basically 49-49 tie. I think the other thing is that a lot of people, we asked in our Wisconsin survey, how likely do you think it is that Donald Trump will be the nominee of the Republican Party and the candidate in November? And we asked the same thing of Joe Biden. And among Republicans, 30% doubted that Biden would be the nominee. And among Democrats, 20% doubted Trump would be the nominee. So you've got a lot of people that aren't yet at the point where I think most pundits, including me, are that surely these nominations are wrapped up. It's way too late for new candidates to enter, just even to get on the ballot in primary states. So now we're talking about possibilities of open conventions. We haven't had open conventions since the 50s, and they're rare even back then. So I think over the next few months, voters are going to come to the stark reality that it's Biden or Trump or a third party, again, unless something unforeseen happens.
So when we look at all of the states, it's almost 50 states or 40 states are already, it's already over. We already know where they're going. And since we have the Electoral College, it doesn't matter by how much they won that state, just that they won it. So it's only just a very few states in the middle that determine the direction of the country when it comes to who's going to be president. And Wisconsin happens to be one of them. Charles, how many states are in the middle, and really, how important are we?
By most counts, there are six genuine swing states that are toss-ups at this point. Georgia and Arizona both voted even more narrowly for Biden than Wisconsin did. Then there's Wisconsin. Then we go to Pennsylvania, Nevada, and Michigan in ascending order of Democratic margin. On the Republican side, Trump's closest state was North Carolina that he won by just over one percentage point. And that's been on some people's list as a possible toss-up state, but I don't think there's a lot of evidence that it really is in that category. So basically, if you take Georgia, where Trump is leading in most of the polls, and Arizona, where I think it's a closer race in the polls, if you took both of those off the table, Biden would win, and if Biden wins Wisconsin plus the other states he won, then Biden gets 270 electoral votes to 268 for Trump. It would be that close. If Biden holds on to Nevada or Arizona in addition to the Great Lakes states, then he has a more comfortable electoral college vote even without Georgia. But finally, you take away those southern and southwestern states and just look at the Great Lakes. We are the closest state that's left, and we are absolutely the state that would determine who has the electoral majority, either for Trump or for Biden.
It's almost frightening. A 270 to 268 win for one of the candidates, or anywhere even close to that. Are we going to have a third of the country, perhaps, that doesn't even believe that either one was elected legitimately? And doesn't that further divide us, Charles?
I think that is actually the biggest, if you want to call it, threat to democracy, or at least to democratic legitimacy. You know, for nearly 4 years now, it's been Democrats saying that Republicans, and Trump in particular, was a threat to democracy. But on the Republican side, who still, by two-thirds margin, think that the 2020 election was not legitimately decided, you really have big factions in both parties that think democracy is at stake. And I think the test will be, come November, do we again see people from both parties claiming that it was illegitimate if their candidate lost? And I think that's a sad fact, but maybe an inevitability that there will be great disgruntlement, especially if it's a super close election where the majority of the Electoral College might not go to the majority of the popular vote. But the way we're going right now, that could as easily be Biden who wins the Electoral College but loses the popular majority as it is Trump. So, and this could change. We've got 8 months to see how this race shapes up. So I don't want to forecast it will necessarily be that close come the fall. But it could happen.
Charles, when you're looking at these swing states, are there common characteristics of what makes these states, what makes Wisconsin so purple? What makes us stand apart from, you know, obviously like southern states or things like that?
Well, I think part of it is division within states. Wisconsin became a deeply divided state after the 2010 elections. And really, we sort of were ahead of the game, if you want to call it that, in the political polarization became so sharp here in 2011 and after. You see that in Arizona, for example. You see it in Georgia, where it had been a very red state, but there's been a growing Democratic vote in Georgia that's now made it a swing state. And so I think that it's not always the same thing everywhere. Here in Wisconsin, what we've seen is the southeast of the state, especially the Milwaukee suburbs, moving in a Democratic direction. But the north and west of the state has mostly been moving in a Republican direction. And the one exception to all of that is the medium-sized cities have been becoming increasingly Democratic. And that builds up some votes there. It doesn't extend to the rural areas around those cities, though. So if you go to Eau Claire, it's become a much more democratic city, but you go a little bit out of town and you're looking at some of the redder parts of the state. And that's true of just about any medium-sized city you could name. In the Fox Valley, the cities have become increasingly blue, but whether it's the congressional district or the legislative districts, those have stayed quite red because it's not just the cities, it's also the surrounding areas.
We are talking with Charles Franklin, the director of the Marquette Law School Poll. The Marquette Law School Poll is one of the most highly respected and regarded polls in the country. And Charles Franklin is one of the most, if not the most respected pollster in the nation. We're going to take a break here shortly, and then we're going to come back and talk about, well, how interested or apathetic are Wisconsin voters when it comes to politics?
The Wisconsin Counties Association represents Wisconsin's 72 counties at both the state and federal level. Learn more about how counties impact your community at wicounties.org.
Welcome back to Local Gov Matters, the podcast of the Wisconsin Counties Association. We are talking with Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette Law School Poll, and one of the most highly respected and well-regarded polls in the country. I don't know of a single poll in the country that has been right every time, but if there is a poll that is more accurate more often than the Marquette Law School poll, I would love to see it, because we've got the best in our state, best in the country, in Charles Franklin. Charles, I read the poll results from the most recent law school poll, Marquette Law School poll. And it seems like while we're in Madison, this is where the podcast originates from, and we're right on this Capitol Square across from the Capitol, so we're kind of Madison-centric and, you know, ground zero for politics. But when I looked at the poll numbers, there's a lot of this state that they're not as well connected politically or as astute or informed or maybe even care as we might think they do. Am I reading it correctly?
Well, I think that we always overstate how much people pay attention to politics unless it's really the headline news. Here, where we're sitting on the Capitol Square, you're pretty focused on what's happening across the street in the Capitol. But for normal people out in the world, they have other lives, other concerns, and they may attend to the news, but news about the inside workings of the legislature really are not the front page of most newspapers or most TV or radio coverage on a day-in and day-out basis. I mean, certainly big things get covered and get covered extensively. But in this last poll of Wisconsin, for example, redistricting has been a very big issue at the legislature and at the Supreme Court. And yet we found 26% of the people said they didn't know enough about redistricting to have an opinion of it. That's kind of stunning for those of us that are wrapped up in politics, but it reflects how distant day-to-day procedural matters that don't seem to affect people directly can be. If you're talking about a governor's race or a Senate race, then people will be pretty well informed by the time we get to November. But even there, right now, 13% say they don't know enough about Tammy Baldwin to have an opinion, and 86% say that about Eric Covey, who just declared his candidacy on the Republican side. Those numbers will change over the course of the campaign, and that's what campaigns do, is inform people. But you cannot assume that everyone is as well as informed as us Madison critters who are paying constant attention to state government.
Sometimes I wonder if we're very well informed. I would read this, the poll results, and I'm thinking, maybe I don't have my finger on the pulse of politics in Wisconsin.
Charles, the work of your polling, what impact do you think it has on the decisions that candidates and campaigns are making?
I doubt that it has much direct influence, in that if it's any kind of a serious campaign or party, they're paying for polling much more frequently than we are, and they're asking questions that are of more value to them in running a race. So we deliberately never do what we call message testing in the polling world. That's where you say, let me describe a candidate who says this and this and this. How inclined would you to be to vote for them? Or, you know, let me ask who you're going to vote for. Now let me tell you, the Republican believes these three things and the Democrat believes those three things. Now who would you vote for? That's the kind of thing that political pollsters, partisan pollsters, are doing all the time, because it helps drive candidate strategies about what to talk about, how much to emphasize it, and how to use that in devising their advertising and their campaigns. We don't do that. We stick with issues that are before the public because they're being talked about in the legislature or in the national political world. We ask about characteristics of candidates and who's better on which issues. But we don't do the kinds of questions that a campaign would routinely do to drive their messaging.
Charles, how many voters in Wisconsin are going to decide the presidential race? I mean, let's say we have a million voters that cast ballots. We know where lots of them are, but how many are in the middle that are really going to be deciding what's what?
In terms of what we might call swing voters or independents, here in Wisconsin, that's a number between about 8% and maybe as high as 12 or 15% who don't identify with either party and who say, I don't even feel closer to one party than the other. But those folks are also less interested in politics. They follow political news less. They're much more likely to make up their minds very late in the campaign because they're just not engaged with it all the time. Hardcore partisans find it hard to believe that there are people who haven't made up their minds and don't really know who's running or who's likely to be the nominee. But in a state like ours, where four of the last six presidential races were decided by less than 25,000 votes, and some by less than 10,000 votes, that swing, even of 8% of the electorate, can be the key to who wins.
For all the listeners of this podcast, Local Gov Matters, being listened to on the web or on your local radio station, they're probably concluding right now that based on what you've just told us, Charles, that we're going to see a lot of political ads in Wisconsin and more later in the campaign. So we're going to flood the airwaves. Is that a fair assumption?
Oh, I think it's a very fair assumption. TV stations are counting their ad revenues already. The thing with us is that with a history of such close elections, campaigns have to put the money in and have to make the effort. And it's become so clear, especially since 2016, where the race hinged on Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, that no state can be taken for granted, even if it has had a recent history of going one way or the other. So I think we'll see an awful lot. We'll also see, depending on whether we have contested partisan primaries in August, a run-up to that with advertising, and especially in the Senate race, whether it's Hovde and others or just Hovde alone, there needs to be a time of substantial spending to build name recognition for those candidates. One of the really striking things is in the governor's race in 2018 on the Democratic side, Tony Evers was not very well known as late as June. And so you really do get a buildup of awareness of candidates close to the primary and then again a surge into the fall. And advertising drives a lot of that.
So, Charles, looking to the fall, are there any big issues from your polling that that stand out that right now are the big issues? And do you think that will pivot as we get to, as you said, closer to November?
Yeah, I think there's the issue of the border, which in both state and national polling shows up as really important to voters. The economy is very high, but we have seen some shifts in views of the economy. On balance, people are still a little more negative than positive. But that number bottomed out in June of 2022 and has been slowly rising but steadily rising since then. Now, the national picture is a bit better than it was. The state picture is considerably more positive than the national picture. And so I think the question of the economy is interesting because it may fade as an issue as people see it as being a bit better, with the result that maybe attention focuses on the border or maybe something else comes to the fore. The abortion issue is certainly one that was very important in 2022. Our polling shows that it still remains a significant concern for voters. And with recent developments in Alabama dealing with in vitro fertilization and the treatment of embryos, that issue is suddenly getting thrust back on the national stage in a way that it hadn't been. But then one state Supreme Court makes a ruling like that, and this issue suddenly pops up as, again, front and center.
Charles, what polls do you watch? I mean, as one of the most respected pollsters in the country, I mean, do you look at other polls and compare the Marquette Law School poll and compare numbers to see where we're at?
Yeah, obviously I'm a geek about this, and so I want to see them. You know, it's sort of simplistic, but the top-rated polls are the New York Times, Siena College polls, which is currently ranked number one in the country. The Washington Post, ABC News, ranked number two. We're ranked number three. And then you get major media polls. CBS, CNN are important polls. Fox News does really excellent polling. Our results are usually close to Fox's in the state, or put it the other way, theirs is usually close to ours. And I like to look through not just those, but others, Quinnipiac, for example, or Marist polls, to see what kinds of questions they're asking and how are they asking them. I'm more than happy to steal from somebody else if I think they've framed a question in a particularly good way. And I think there's an advantage to that, because then readers can compare my results with Fox or my results with CNN, for example. And it also means I'm not going out with an untested survey question. On the other hand, if I don't like what others have asked, I'm more than happy to make up my own questions. But I respect those pollsters. I'm very interested in what they're doing and what their focus on issues is like and how that compares to where I think Wisconsin's issues are. Finally, a lot is driven by what happens across the street in the Capitol. If the legislature is talking about something, I'm much more likely to ask questions about it than if it's an issue they've ignored. So we asked about marijuana legalization in this last question. We hadn't asked about it for a while because the legislature hadn't moved on the issue in a long time. But when they started talking about it, I thought I should ask about it. Likewise, they brought up a 14-week abortion ban. So we asked about that because it was getting attention.
Where are we on marijuana as a state?
In terms of medical marijuana, it's in the high 80s that say we should legalize medical marijuana. In terms of marijuana in general, meaning recreational as well, that support is in the mid-60s and has come up from being a little bit underwater in 2012 or 13 when we first asked about a little more opposition than support. That's come up pretty steadily over time and seems to have kind of flattened out in the mid-60s now.
I'll tell you, I've been to in northern Michigan and southern Wisconsin driving past these dispensaries that are right on the border. Those things are they're busier than a, you know, brand new fast food restaurant in a small village. I mean, they're running through.
I grew up in that village with that fast food restaurant.
It's incredible. Those are high numbers.
They are high, and even among Republicans, it's now basically an even split on recreational legalization. And with Republicans, it's 78% for medical. But as so many of these things show, public opinion, even within party, can be one-sided or lopsided. But the legislature can be really unwilling to move on that, either for fear that their base would not accept that or for legislators' belief that it's not good policy to do it. So for better or for worse, public opinion doesn't always drive legislation, though it's rare to see legislation running against adamant opposition from the public. But it doesn't necessarily move the legislature to act.
So, Charles, wrapping this up here, do you think as we get closer to November, we're coming quickly toward it, shockingly, we're almost to March, do you think people are going to have some sort of aha moment where the numbers are going to shift big, or are we looking at what we're looking at now could very well be what we're looking at come November?
Well, my feeling is that over the spring and summer, it will become absolutely clear that Biden and Trump are the nominees, again, absent an act of God or something. And at that point, people will begin to focus more on, well, look, these are the choices I have. Right now, there's a lot of fantasy that if only this would happen, we could have an open convention and things could be really different. I think that's unlikely to happen. So I'm looking for early summer, midsummer, to see some sorting out about what people are going to do. But I do think that the dissatisfaction with both of the leading candidates is enough that we're likely to still see this really tight race with some grudging support for those candidates, or the decision to go third party or drop out, don't vote, or at least skip the top of the ticket.
We have been talking with Charles Franklin, the director of the Marquette Law School poll and one of the most well-respected and highly regarded pollsters in the country. Charles, I think we're going to have you back maybe mid to late summer as we get closer to the election. And if these two individuals, Trump and Biden, are not the candidates, we're going to lose this tape. If they are, we're going to say Charles called it way back when.
But there will be no pandemic to make that happen.
That's correct.
As always, find Local Gov Matters on your favorite podcast streaming service, from Apple Music to Spotify to Podbean to Stitcher. You can also link to this podcast from our WCA website at wicounties.org. And as always, we encourage you to reach out to us with any topics or guests you would like to see. Thank you, and as always, we will catch you next time on
Local Gov Matters. Charles, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.